Hi, Erica. We're going to hear this afternoon. First of all, I want to apologize for the lateness of the hour. The Senate was debating a bill for until 10 minutes to 1, until 10 minutes to 1. And at that point in time, I allowed the members additional time to go and get their lunch. So we are back. And Representative Strobeck.
Yesterday we were on the House floor until 5 minutes to 1, and you still made us come here at 1 o'clock.
Or... I am sorry. No, I'm cold. Not sorry.
I just wanted to say that's the difference between a senator and a House member.
They eat that. Yeah, they do. Okay. We're going to hear again. Today we have public testimony scheduled. However, we are also going to hear more testimony from the Commission on Blind for the Blind from Mr. Young to tell us about the actual programs of the Commission and go over that with us before we start our testimony. So, and before Mr. Young begins, I just want to explain that I see the room is full, and we have quite a few people signed up to testify, and I will get to as many of you as I possibly can. Since we didn't get our presentation yesterday on this particular budget, I wanted to bring Mr. Young forward and have him give that prior to our public testimony. We'll go into testimony, try to limit, and I'll give instructions on that when we get there, but I just, for the folks that are out here today, we were going to have all public testimony today, but we did need to have further hearing on the Commission for Blind. So, Mr. Young.
Chairperson, members of the committee, I'm Chuck Young, the director of the Oregon Commission for the Blind. As per your directions, I'm going to try to be brief and talk fast today. I have two handouts there. One is a brochure that talks about our services to employers in the state of Oregon. And you asked that I explain our programs. All of our programs are explained in this brochure that we developed specifically for employers, and also illustrates the types of individuals that we help into employment in the state who are visually impaired and blind. There's samples in there if you want to quickly file through that. Through the brochure, shows an example of a person who's a professional builder for a living that we help get into employment. There's an attorney that we helped, a baker's assistant. There's a forensics DNA specialist for the state police department who's blind, a personal trainer who is also a runner trying out for the Olympics and training in Eugene, and she's a personal trainer on the side who's a client of our agency, tax preparing specialist, customer service reps, a teacher, and a machinist. Teacher's a Portland Public School third grade teacher. The next handout I have in front of you is a breakout of our various programs, and I will go through there, and I will gladly entertain any questions that you have as we go through. The first program we talk about is the Rehabilitation Service Program. That's our largest program, well over half the agency staff and more than half the resources go into this program. This is the program where the rubber meets the road, if you will. This is where we work with eligible blind people in all the communities of the state to help them do two things. One, learn to live independently, learn alternative ways of reading and writing with Braille, teach them techniques to maintain their home and live in the community, to travel. And once they've acquired these skills to be participating members of the community, then we also provide them vocational counseling and training, and we can provide any service possible on an individualized basis that will help the individual into employment. It describes there are a couple of different types of services we typically provide. The next two programs that I will mention is the Orientation and Career and Technology Center and the Business Enterprise Program. These two programs grew out of our rehab program over the years and have specialty focuses. There are two witnesses that were here yesterday that are back today that will be prepared to talk about those programs. Mary Ann Topolowski is a student of was a former student of the Orientation Center, and Mr. Winslow Parker is the technology director who works with all the fancy Star Wars type stuff, the talking computers and that, and he's here and we'll demonstrate any of that equipment if you'd like to see it.
Before you go on, Mr. Young, I would hope that you as the director can tell us really how the program works rather than the anecdotal stories of the persons to whom it serves. That's helpful after we actually know the function. This is a legislative committee here that decides on the budget and
okay.
We make serious decisions about funding. Right. So we need to understand what we're funding.
The Orientation, Career, and Technology Center is a residential program. We have an apartment building that we rent, and people from outside the Portland metropolitan area reside in these apartments, and they attend classes every day for approximately 8 hours. They might have an hour of travel class in the morning. They might have an hour of cooking class to learn alternative means of cooking. They might have an hour where they work with a career specialist to try to identify their vocation upon graduation. They might take a class in technology. They might take a class on maximizing vision. They might have a personal management class on how to apply makeup and shave and what have you with a visual impairment or blindness. Those programs are intensive programs primarily for newly blinded people, and they're for the most part people who intend to go to work, and so they need an extensive background in the alternative skills to function in our society.
Do they have a particular age group?
That's a very good question, Mr. Chair. It's for people who are no longer involved in the public school system there. And so whatever time they, if they leave 16 or 21 or whatever they, when they leave K through 12 school system, then we pick them up full time. Before that, we have a transition program for kids in transition. I'll talk about that in a minute. But for the most part, our clients there are adults, except for in the summer, we switch to working with high school age kids.
And these are people that should be able to go to work?
That's right. It's presumed that they will have a vocational goal. There's some rare exceptions to that, but I don't think it's worth getting into. But these are people who need extensive training in order to function in our society as a blind person. The rehabilitation service program I talked about above there works with people in the communities. These are people who need minimal amount of training to live and reside in the community. The technology and career centers for people who need extensive training.
And how does somebody become a part of this? Who decides whether an individual can take part in this? Who makes the decision? What organization? What agency?
It's our agency counselors. We have counselors in all parts of the state who sit down with these individual people and determine with them if this is a program that's viable for them. So it's a joint decision between the consumer and the counselor as to which of these programs they would participate in. And each program by law is individual. We write an individual plan of achievement on everybody. It's almost like a contract between them and us as to what we're going to provide. And each program is individually written.
So there are offices for the Commission of the Blind around the state?
Yes, ma'am. We have offices in Medford and Salem and Eugene and Portland. And each of the counselors has a multiple county area that they cover. And we travel out into the community to see our constituents.
Are they housed in some other state agency building? You just have a small office in these communities?
In Coos Bay, we're in with other state agencies.
You didn't mention Coos Bay. How many offices are there?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Medford, Salem, Eugene, Portland, and Coos Bay. And then we do have some teachers in other areas of the state who work out of their house. And we contract with a teacher in Eastern Oregon that works for the school district part of the day and works for us the rest of the day. So we have people who work out of their homes as well as offices per se. We have office space donated by the Southern Oregon Lions Club, so sometimes we're in a building with private people as well. We have an office at the School for the Blind. The next program I'll mention is our Business Enterprise Program, and that's a program to assist blind people obtain cell phone businesses. And we have two staff in that program, and we have some 30 blind managers who trained to manage cafeterias and snack bars and vending routes throughout the state. That staff also works as technical expertise to other blind people who want to go into cell phone businesses. We had a couple of cell phone business people yesterday testify, and we have had a great deal of success with blind people owning their own businesses.
Who is eligible for this?
Anybody who is legally blind and who is in need of employment and has one or more functional limitations to getting employment.
Okay. And there's no waiting list. No, everybody is eligible. Is that what you're saying, that you serve everybody that has a need?
Everybody that's legally blind and who's out of work and has one or more functional limitations to employment. For instance, if we work with an individual and train them to be an attorney, a blind person that becomes an attorney, goes out and practices law for 3 or 4 years, come back and says, I don't want to do this anymore, he would not be eligible because he doesn't have a handicap to employment. He doesn't have a functional need. He's already been trained as a lawyer. So you have to be blind, and you have to be unemployed, and you have to have two or more needs, you know, that they're caused by your disability that causes you to be eligible.
And you said that some of the people work in public buildings.
In the business enterprise program, we have a priority to offer vending in public, state, county, and municipal buildings. So we have snack bars, cafeterias, and vending machines in state, county, and municipal buildings, and also private locations.
And so this is, and you just coordinate this with other public entities?
Yes, ma'am. We train and license the managers and contract with the building owners to provide that service in the building.
Madam Chair?
Senator Shields.
Downtown Portland at the county courthouse. To the left of the main staircase, there's the operator of the snack.
No.
Stop right there?
Yes, sir.
That'd be one of yours. What happens, say somebody's run that for 5 or 10, 15 years, that person retires or whatever, is it a contract for somebody else who's blind gets to go into that?
Senator Shields, when a person leaves, we send that unit out for bid, and the existing operators in the program have first option to transfer to that unit that's up for bid, and if none of them bid on it, then the new operators that we're training, so it's like a seniority system in part. And then we have a committee, if the two or more operators apply, we have a committee with the building people making the final decision.
But it is reserved for the blind there at that courthouse.
Yes, sir.
Across the state of Florida, right?
Yes, sir. For instance, Mrs. Crook, who testified yesterday, operated several facilities for us and put her children through school and that, and used the money she made over that out of those businesses over the years to buy the florist shop that she now owns. She used that as a stepping stone in business and progressively took on bigger and bigger units and then moved out into the private sector.
That's great. Thank you.
The next program I'd like to speak to is the Youth Transition Program. We have a program now in its 20th year. Very successful program that's been written up nationally on numerous occasions, but it's a summer work experience program wherein we offer to help every blind youth in the state of Oregon between 15 and 21 years of age get a summer job. For those kids that have the skills to learn to function independently, such as travel on the bus and that, we have them reside at Reed College in Portland in the dormitory, and we place them in summer jobs in the greater Portland area, and they ride the public transportation, and they're responsible for cooking their own meals and taking care of their room and what have you. For multiply handicapped individuals who are not quite ready to travel independently or cook and take care of themselves, we have a cooperative program with the School for the Blind in Salem here. And many of those individuals work in supported work jobs in the community where they might have a job coach or somebody and some additional assistance getting to and from work, and their meals are available to them through a cafeteria at the School for the Blind. The students on average work 30 hours per week and are paid minimum wage or higher. And for many of these young people, this is their first time being away from home, being on their own. And sometimes they come from communities where they don't have public transportation, so it's a very huge growth experience for these individuals. And we find when we contact these young people years later, 5, 10, 15 years later, at any given time, we always find that at least 75% of them are now working in the larger work community, which is significant because nationally there's a 75% unemployment rate of adult blind people. So we find just the opposite rate of employment for these people who are in that summer work experience program.
Representative Brown.
I wanted to follow up on your cooperation with the School for the Blind and the regional programs that are run by ESD that support blind students all over the state. What I'm hearing you saying is that for these 15 to 21-year-olds, you're very active in the vocational piece. What is the overlap about teaching better use of Braille and life skills? I know that the School for the Blind and the Department of Education run a summer program. So explain to me how these things fit together.
the School for the Blind program for independent living skills such as cooking, that they tend to take a younger population, the kids that are 11, 12, and that, not quite. And it's an option. The kids can go to our program for a summer job, or they can go to the skills training program offered by the school. We encourage them to do both, whichever best meets their needs, so that by the time they leave the public school system, they'll be able, hopefully, to live on their own, attend college or a training program, or go directly into employment. We coordinate with them. We often run seminars on skills like technology during spring break. So when the schools are not in operation, we offer the kids an opportunity to come in and go through our technology center. Over the Christmas break, we offer programs in cooperation with the regional programs and the School for the Blind and that, so that when the kids aren't enrolled in the public school programs, so we work very close with them to try to coordinate times whenever we can work jointly with them with the kids that doesn't interfere with their work day. For example, we have the first or the last Friday of every month, I can't remember which, we have all the real young blind kids from the Portland metropolitan area come to our building and use our kitchens and our lunchrooms and learn how to cook and learn daily living skills in our lunchroom and in our facilities. We work with the schools to sponsor a Braille reading club for little children, and it rewards them for how many books they read over the summer in Braille. So we have many cooperative programs with the school district.
Thank you.
And some of them are joint funded.
When you say our facilities, you mean?
The headquarters of the Commission for Fine Arts Building. We have them use our facilities, you know, for the kitchens.
And that is?
But you don't usually find in schools.
Where is your headquarters?
535 Southeast 12th Street in Portland. We're one of three state agencies that's headquartered in Portland. And this puts us very close to 60% of our constituency, so it's worked out rather well for us over the years to be in Portland, because that puts us close to 60% of the blind population and on the public bus routes. We've had chances to move over the years, and I've always said, no, we need to stay in the inner city of Portland so we can be accessible as many people as we possibly can. The next program that's some confusing to understand in one regard is the Independent Living and Older Blind Program. So this program has very limited grant funding, and it's a very big, it's a program that has a great, huge constituency of people who could benefit with a very small budget in comparison to the total commission. We have, I think it's about a little over $400,000 total in our biennial budget, where we can reach out to serve older blind people. And as I mentioned yesterday, three of the four leading causes of blindness are age-related. So we have this huge population that's only eligible for less than 5% of our funded programs. Senator Ken Jones and Senator Monroe Sweetland are examples of the types of individuals we might work with in this program. We go out into the home, or as I think I mentioned yesterday, we teach them whatever skills needed to make that, to maximize their independence in the home and reduce their dependence on other people, like teaching techniques to how to measure their medication and take their medications, or how to mark their medications because they can't see well enough to tell this one from that, and so they don't get confused when they take medications. Things of how to tell time and various other things without vision, how to mark the stove so they can continue to cook with their stove, whatever services are necessary to enable this person's continued mastery of their life in their home community. People need to be 55 or older to be eligible for this program, but the truth is that the vast majority of the people are 75 or over. And this program, again, costs us on average of $400 per person to serve them in their homes and communities.
Who's the grant?
The Rehabilitation Services Administration.
Which is?
The same federal funding source, part of the Department of Ed, that we get our vocational rehabilitation money from. But this, in this program, you don't have to have a vocational goal. And we do have older people, 60, 70, 80, that do have vocational goals. We just merely move them over to that program if they want to go to work. Or if they don't, this is the only program we can serve the older blind who don't want to go to work.
Mr. Young, I'm feeling your rush to try to go over your agency so that we can have public testimony, that I personally don't think that I am getting enough information about the actual services, and you know a lot about it, and I can tell that, because if I ask a question, you've got the answer. But what I need and would like from you is, you know, when you say rehabilitation, whatever, I started to write it down. You're familiar with that. But I want to be sure that this committee understands who that is, that it's federal funds, that it's limited, that you have to apply for it, and who's eligible. And you've covered some of those things in this sheet. But as I stated at the beginning, rather than me having to try to ask all the questions, I'm just wondering if you can go back to the drawing board and do a little bit more of a budget presentation, maybe like all the other agencies have actually done. We have the detailed budget notebook, but we primarily get a little bit better explanation of what the programs are. And some might think this is, you know, this is a commission, maybe insignificant, but I don't think it's insignificant, and I'm sure the people who receive services from it don't think it's insignificant either. And I think it's important that we as legislators understand where it is we are placing these monies, what the commission is doing, to whom, who they are partnering with, the rate of growth, all of the measurements that you use of outcomes that you have for yourself. And while, you know, I know you probably think that we appreciate a real speedy presentation because we're presented with a lot of budgets, I think that maybe a little bit more background that you're assuming we know. I think it may be because you just have this vast knowledge and you think we do, and maybe some of the other committee members do, but frankly I don't, and I think that we need to have that presented each triennium. So if you want to continue and finish the rest of these pages that you've supplied us, because you do have some numbers here, that would be all right, but I actually would like to see, and I can talk to you later about what the detail that I'd like to have for the committee, but I don't know if you can go through these accomplishments, if you'd like to put those on the record.
Chairman, if I could do that and then get into the figures, I thought about today breaking out figures for every one of these programs separately, but then I thought, well, it's back at the end, and maybe that will help clear it up, and then I can help explain it better. Yesterday you talked about average hourly wages. Our average hourly wages of our consumers who go to work is $10.17 an hour. We find that 93% of the constituents that we work with are placed in employment are working 24 months or 2 years after closure. 87% of the clients receiving services are successfully employed. 89% of the clients said the quality services they received from the commission were excellent or good. 93% of the clients said they were satisfied with the services received. Now, on the next page, I get into the funding sources of which the funding that we drive. Our biggest funding sources are vocational rehabilitation program. I can't stress enough the word vocational and vocational. This program is to serve people who have vocational goals, that the object is they will eventually go to work. And that's, you know, gets confused sometimes with the independent living program, where there's not the need for a vocational goal. We receive our funding from the United States Department of Ed. They have a rehabilitation services division. When the money comes here, it's split between us and the vocational rehabilitation division. We receive 12.5%, and they receive the rest of the federal money, provided we're able to match that money. That money comes to us in a very attractive matching formula. We get $3.7 of federal money for every dollar of matchable money the state of Oregon puts up.
there's a lot of restrictions as to what can be considered a matchable dollar. It has to be money, and it has to be real hard dollar money for the most part, and it cannot be other federal funds from another federal, but you can't match federal money with federal money. It has to be money that's generated here in the state of Oregon. Our total budget then, as it stands right now, is that we put up $1.3 million in general fund matching dollars. We have some other funds, and I'm going to explain that in a minute, where they come from. And we use the general fund and the other funds to match $7,374,000 worth of federal funds for a total vocational rehabilitation budget of $9.3 million. The next budget is for supported work, and this is for people who are so severely employed that they cannot go to work without somebody helping them in the job, and we get grant funding from the same source. And that's very focused money for this population of multiple handicaps. That amounts to $105,000. We get training grants, again, from the federal government.
Representative Brown?
What's involved in supporting employment? What are the activities that you do?
For the most part, it's paying for somebody. I have a young lady who works in my office. She's worked there for 7 years. She's deaf, blind, quadriplegic. And she's classified as developmentally disabled. She runs a little food service operation in my building. We buy Cokes, and she provides coffee for my staff, and we purchase those things from her. She has a cell phone business. She could not do that business without a job coach who goes out and shops for all of her product because she can't drive, she can't get out. It would be difficult. So we have a coach that goes to the Costco and buys pop and volume and buys coffee and these rolls and chewing gum and candy bars and what have you, and bring that in, and the coach helps her display these products, and then if you want to buy one of these products, you get the product and you get a price tag in Braille that goes with it, and you hand her the money in the Braille, and she makes the change, and she benefits from this business. Supported work is for people who need these kind of additional supports. They cannot do the job solely by themselves. They need somebody else to help them. Either once a week, once a day, once an hour, whatever. It's usually a tapered thing. You usually start out with a great deal of one-on-one assistance and gradually wean the assistance down to eventually you can get that service hopefully from a coworker.
Okay, let's follow up here. And so as I'm understanding it, this would be a biennial budget, so that'd be about $50,000 a year you have to spend. How many people are you able to assist with that $50,000?
About 12 individuals a year.
Thank you.
Okay. The next is a training grant. Again, this is federal money used to train our staff, not clients. This is for in-service training for staff. That's a biennial figure. Then we get to our independent living program, and we have one independent living grant that does not specify an age to it. So this is for any visually or any legally blind person who needs skills to function in independent living, but for whatever reason does not have a vocational goal. So we're able to serve a very small group of individuals who don't have a vocational goal, teach them how to cook and clean and maintain their home, and that who, for whatever reason, usually multiple disabilities, are not yet ready to go to work, or really, the idea of work is not quite on the Richter scale of things that are going to be in the foreseeable future. Hopefully with some of these individuals, after we provide the independent living services, they begin to see employment as a possibility in our transition to the vocational caseload. Then we have a grant that's $472,000 over 2 years for a program to serve visually impaired people who are over the age of 55 who don't have a vocational goal. And this is, again, where we teach people in their homes and their communities all over the state of Oregon. And this service is best provided in their homes rather than having them come into us. And then the Industry for the Blind program is a $1,330,000 expenditure limitation that's in our budget. So we have approximately 50 developmentally disabled and blind, multiple handicapped, usually deaf, blind, quadriplegics with seizure disorders and various other disabilities, all also including developmentally disabled, and who have visual impairments. Many of these people are former residents of Fairview that were moved out of there. And we receive grants from the county to serve these people, and that money comes through the mental health division
to the counties, and then we turn around and serve these individuals because they have a visual impairment or blind, or are blind. We have approximately 50 constituents in that program, and we have a staff of about 20 people, and that's all funded with grant money outside our budget. So when you see that $1,300,000, that's just an expenditure limit, so we can run that program through our budget.
Madam Chair, and so why is it called Industries for the Blind? What is the industry piece of it?
Because they work. It's a work center. It's an employment program. They work every day. A lot of them, they only make little 50 cents an hour sometimes, but it's a work program. It's a day program where they go to work, and versus a mental health group home type. Job solely by themselves. They need somebody else to help them, either once a week, once a day, once an hour, whatever. It's usually that taper thing. You usually start out with a great deal of one-on-one assistance and gradually wean the assistance down to eventually you can get that services, hopefully from a coworker.
Madam Chair, just to follow up here, and so as I'm understanding it, this would be a biennial budget, so that'd be about $50,000 a year you have to spend. How many people are you able to assist with that $50,000?
About 12 individuals here.
Thank you.
Okay. The next is a training grant. Again, this is federal money used to train our staff, not clients. This is for in-service training for staff. That's a biennial figure. Then we get to our independent living program, and we have one independent living grant that does not specify an age to it. So this is for any visually or any legally blind person who needs skills to function in independent living, but for whatever reason does not have a vocational goal. So we're able to serve a very small group of individuals who don't have a vocational goal, teach them how to cook and clean and maintain their home, and that who, for whatever reason, usually multiple disabilities, are not yet ready to go to work, or that really the idea of work is not quite on the Richter scale. Things are going to be in the foreseeable future. Hopefully with some of these individuals, after we provide the independent living services, they begin to see employment as a possibility in our transition to the vocational caseload. Then we have a grant that's $472,000 over 2 years for a program to serve visually impaired people who are over the age of 55 who don't have a vocational goal. And this, again, is where we teach people in their homes and their communities all over the state of Oregon. And this service is best provided in their homes rather than having them come into us. And then the Industries for the Blind program is a $1,330,000 expenditure limitation that's in our budget. We have approximately 50 developmentally disabled and blind, multiple handicapped, usually they're deaf, blind, quadriplegics with seizure disorders and various other disabilities, all also including developmentally disabled, and who have visual impairments. Many of these people are former residents of Fairview that were moved out of there. And we receive grants from the counties to serve these people, and that money comes through the mental health division to the counties, and then we turn around and serve these individuals because they have a visual impairment or blind or are blind. We have approximately 50 constituents in that program, and we have a staff of about 20 people, and that's all funded with grant money outside our budget. So when you see that $1,300,000, that's just an expenditure limit, so we can run that program through our budget.
Madam Chair, and so why is it called Industries for the Blind? What is the industry piece of it?
Because they work. It's a work center. It's an employment program. They work every day. A lot of them, they only make little 50 cents an hour sometimes, but it's a work program. It's a day program where they go to work, and versus a mental health group home type program, an evening program. Most of these people are sponsored by mental health and group homes in the evening. And this is, it's called the Industries because it's an industry. They do work. They have jobs.
And where do they work?
Seventh and Ankeny in Portland. And we have about a 20,000 square foot industrial building.
What kinds of things do they do?
They assemble bicycle brakes for 10-speed bicycles for a company in Lake Oswego. They assemble surgical clamps that hospitals use to pinch off the surgical, the flow of liquids like in IVs and that.
these people assemble that sometimes using their mouth or whatever, that, you know, that, and then that stuff's all sent out sterilized afterwards. We have a variety of the little collating contracts. Some of those people, a minority of those people, maybe 8 or 9 of them, work out in communities for a while. They cleaned motel rooms. They had a work crew that did that. They've done shredding of documents for banks. They've run little dry stand snack bars in state and county buildings where 3 or 4 of them will work in a public building with one coach helping 3 or 4 people run the store.
Madam Chair, just so that I can understand this this line item here. So we are spending $1 million on 50 individuals in Portland. Am I right about that?
No, ma'am.
Okay, well, help me out.
This is an expenditure limitation. That's why you see zero federal dollars and you see zero general fund dollars in the columns next to it. This is basically a license for us to do business. You have said I can go out and do $1,300,000 worth of business in the industries if I can go out and generate that business. So you give me the authority to do that. In other words, I can't bring any money into the commission or spend any money without your authority. So you give me it's like a hunting license, basically. This is a hunting license to go do business, and you cap that license at $1,000,003. Other people give me that money, the employees and the people that work in that program. None of those people are civil servant employers. They are a private industry who works under our auspices, and you cap that business at $1,000,003. For all practical purposes, that could say $50 million and wouldn't make a difference to you folks up there, except for our budget. It would look like we have a $50 million budget, but all this is expenditure limitation.
So what is your typical biannual expenditure in this? What did you spend this
biannual? Zero. In state and federal money, it's zero.
No, I meant you had this limitation, or we were asking for this limitation. So how big was the seat of your program during this biennium?
I would say it's right $1,300,000, because it goes over that half.
Yeah, and it's what these individuals work for and bring in. Is that correct?
It's the total amount of money that comes in to either pay for the wages of the staff or the total amount of money that's paid to the clients in wages. It's the total amount of revenue generated by that program plus the wages paid to the staff of that program. Most of it's wages to the staff. There's 20 staff and 50 multiple handicapped individuals in that program.
You understand now? Okay. Essentially, that the blind individuals and coaches are out working somewhere, and this commission has the ability to bring in and pay both, they to generate business at $1,330,000, and from that money they pay both the blind folks who have been working to do these things in those industries and the 20 staff persons. Representative Strobeck.
Mr. Young, is that a statutory cap? Is that what you're saying? That it's in statute somewhere that says
it's a legislative cap that you legislate on my budget? It's the same as the park fees. You tell the Parks and Rec they can raise approximate amount of park fees. That's an estimate of how much business the parks are going to generate over the year. It's just an estimate. You're saying I can do up to $1,300,000. If I go over that, I have to come back to the e-board and get your permission to go over that. I say business is better than I ever thought it could be. I made another $50,000. Can I take it? Can I accept it? Can I bring it in and do that business? It's a control measure that you have over our agency. So you have some handle on what we're doing out there.
But there must be some relationship between what the statutory cap is and what you expect business to be. I mean, otherwise,
yeah, this is an estimate of what we think
that is part of the budget package that you estimate will be the amount of business that you can generate.
And that's what I'm doing right here. I'm saying this is approximate business we're projecting to do in the next biennium, $1,300,000.
Okay, so I think if you characterize it and say it's a legislative cap, it sounds like a prohibition, some sort of a restraint that we are putting on your agency and your initiative, and I don't think that's the way you mean to characterize it.
Well, the exact professional term for it is an expenditure limitation. Is exact. So that is a cap, basically. It's a,
yeah. I think we're
it's the same. I just want to try to explain this, and I'd like to add some light to this. The same as the expenditure limitation we put on the Oregon Medical Association, for instance, or the Nurses Association, they are allowed to charge a certain number of fees up to a cap. We put a cap on every one of those agents. Okay? In this situation, it's a public arena.
No.
Yes, it is.
You're talking about that it's limited. We understand that it's limited. I think, and what Representative Spurlbeck said, that's thoroughly limited. Well, we as a budget committee can limit that amount of funds, but it's both coming in and going out. As it is, I mean, this is a little different than collecting fees. Or not little. It is very different than collecting fees.
Well,
it's blind individuals going out and working and producing a million, $1.3 million worth of business, whereby they get paid, under testimony I just heard, maybe 50 cents an hour, and 20 staff are getting paid as well.
Right. The limit isn't 50 cents an hour. They get paid depending on...
No, well, I didn't say it was the limit. She just testified that some of them get paid 50 cents an hour.
The pay is based on how much they produce versus the industrial standard for that job. So if they do 10% of the industrial, they get 10%. It's a piece-weighted situation. Most of that money is staff. These people are for... these people are severely multiply handicapped. Most of them have spent most of their life in Fairview. This is oftentimes the first time they have not been institutionalized. Many of these people are quite limited. I'm not talking about just blind. They're blind, deaf-blind, quadriplegic with seizure disorders and diagnosed as developmentally disabled or not even able to measure the capacities of some of these people. Most of them have to be assisted extensively, sometimes to eat and what have you. The staff in this program work very hard, so very low wage.
Yeah, right, that's right. Exactly.
Can I ask a question?
Right. A very quick one, Senator.
Well, I would like to know, and just get it on the record, most of these people would, I'm assuming, be able to communicate enough that they can tell you that they prefer doing this over being warehoused at some place like Fairview.
That is correct, Senator. That is correct. Although many of them do not speak or they have cards and stuff that we, symbolism and stuff like that we use to communicate.
I think what we're going to do at this juncture, because we have gone through these figures and have a lot of questions, I think what we'll do, Mr. Young, is probably bring you back, and we're going to go into public testimony, because there are a lot of individuals out here waiting to give their public testimony. Thank you for your presentation. I will talk with you with the legislative fiscal officer about what we'd like to have when you come back to the committee.
Senator Yee. I apologize for coming in late. Mm-hmm. I have a question for Mr. Young. Is it late?
Yes, I think it is. It's late. Because he will be back.
Oh, I'll ask him after
the meeting. Thank you. Okay, we are going to close on the public hearing on... Actually, what we're going to do is we're going to open a public hearing. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5501 and open the public hearing on House Bill 5029, which is the department, which is the Vocational Rehabilitation Division. And I think there are some individuals. Okay. And what we're going to do is call up panels of three. Oh, we got... I think that this is only one page. I would like to call Daniel Hunter, Bonnie Bandolas, Rose Hughes Douglas up to the podium. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. If you would like to, I'll give my instructions on a public testimony, just so that we can get as many individuals as possible that is here. We'd like to hear from just about everybody. I'd ask you to try to limit your testimony. Before you speak, if you would identify yourself for the record so that the transcriber can make note of your name. And if there are issues that maybe would be repeated several times over, if you could limit those repetitions. Thank you, and good afternoon.
Okay. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to address you. My name is Bonnie Bandolis. I'm from Eugene, Oregon. I'm a volunteer with Vocational Rehabilitation, and I'm also board president for Self-Help for Hard of Hearing People. I want to pledge my support on behalf of Vocational Rehabilitation for the partnership that they build. As a person with a severe to profound hearing loss, I have taken advantage of their services and have benefited from their services in the past. And now I'm also in a position to where I can provide service in return by connecting people with other community resources. And Vocational Rehabilitation, from my experience with them, they make really good use of their community resources, and they give concrete help to people, and I'm just supporting it. So thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Rose Hughes. I'm from Douglas County.
I see. That was your county.
You sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm here on behalf of Vocational Rehabilitation. And I was a client of theirs and was allowed to go to college and get my Associate of Arts in business. Through their help, I earned that degree, and I am now working successfully at Hyundai Electronics in Eugene. And I would like to say that if it hadn't been for Vocational Rehabilitation, I probably would still be unemployable and wouldn't have a desire to go back and go further in my college training. So I think it's a very worthwhile program.
Thank you.
My name is Daniel Hunter, and I'm from Springfield, Oregon. I'm a graduate student in landscape architecture. I'm working on a master's thesis right now that's in regards to disability aesthetics and prejudice in design. In 1986, I lost my prior profession, pretty much went home to die. After several years of total retreat and collapse, I started looking around and got interested in why I was being removed from my family and outdoor design, and found landscape architecture, couldn't get the funding, have lost all my savings due to medical bills. Went to Voc Rehab after exploring at the university. Voc Rehab turned me down because of multiple diagnoses. So I borrowed money against my van, went to school for a year, proved I could do it, went back to Voc Rehab, and they have funded me now for 4 years. I finished a bachelor in landscape architecture last summer. I've got all my master's work done except for my thesis. I submitted an abstract of my thesis to a conference in Washington, D.C., was accepted. We'll be giving a paper and lecture in Washington next month, sent by the architectural school, and that will be published. I'm hoping to get my thesis when it's finished published also. And without Voc Rehab, I think I would still be at home, depressed, waiting to die.
Well, we thank you for your testimony. Are there questions of any of you? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if I could ask Ms. Bandolis,
mm-hmm.
Just if you could just describe the device that you're using. As,
I'm using?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Oh. This is a pocket talker or a personal FM. It's a personal listening system. And it's one of the things that I was able to learn through Vocational Rehabilitation, as well as the connection to Self-Help for Hard of Hearing, because they show you what are some of the things that we can do besides wearing hearing aids Hidden loss is an invisible loss, and I don't sign. I depend just through my hearing aid, my assistive listening system, and speech reading you.
Mm.
And so, and all my other skills that I use. And vocational rehabilitation gives people hope and connects people. So this is an FM system. It's a personal listening system.
Mm.
And I can be in like a noisy situation, and I'm using my prescription of both my hearing aids along with the amplification that I'm getting through this microphone so that I can participate, because hearing loss is a communication loss, and I want to be involved. So thank you.
I'd like to say one more thing. Besides investing in my education, I have profoundly influenced at least 4 years of design students at the University of Oregon who will be looking at universal design in the state of Oregon and in throughout America because of their relationship to me, which was funded by Vocal Rehab.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Representative E.
That's keeping it simple, yeah?
I apologize.
Thank you. I want to ask the landscape architect to be, did the vocational rehab funded your education for 4 years?
For 3 years. I borrowed for my first year and then pretty much ran out of what I could borrow. And so they have funded part-time for tuition, art supplies, and transportation, computer systems for 3 years.
Okay. Another question. So how are you funded for your living expenses for those 3 years?
I am married. My wife went back to work. We have two children, and living's tight. But we live off my wife's income, and then I have Social Security.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. If there are no further questions of this panel, thank you again. We appreciate your testimony. The next group I'd like to call up is Julianne Huckstep.
No.
Julia, excuse me. And Ruth Ann Paz Carruthers, Pat Boyd. Is Carruthers your location?
I don't know.
Honorable members of the Ways and Means Committee, I'm here on behalf of the Governor's Rehabilitation Council. I'm a member of their business committee, and we wish to support the full funding of the vocational rehabilitation budget. One reason that we would like it completely refunded is we currently have an exceptional vocational rehabilitation system here in Oregon.
You need your name for the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ruth Ann Cox Carruthers. We currently have an exceptional vocational rehabilitation system here in Oregon. The division has ranked nationally seventh in several major categories of rehabilitation. Number two, the majority of our population is aging. One out of four people become disabled before the age of retirement, being 65. And between the ages of 65 and 70, that goes up to one in three. We're asking Oregonians to work longer. A lot of us will be working well into our 70s, which means that we are going to have a population of individuals that will have disabilities that's going to be increasing. And employers need the services of vocational rehabilitation to be able to identify accommodations so that their employees can continue to work. And number three, for every dollar that we receive from the Oregon budget, the federal government matches $4. And if you look at that economically, you know, the budget needs to be fully matched so that individuals with disabilities in the state have can continue to have the good services that they have.
Thank you. My name is Julia Huckstep, and I'm from Eugene. The car I was driving 4 years ago was hit by a semi-truck. At the time of the crash, I had dreams of becoming a large animal vet. After the crash, I became increasingly involved in the disabled community, and because I could not foresee me chasing my patients across the pasture any longer, I began reconsidering my career goals. Vocational rehab was instrumental in that process. They helped me broaden my thinking and look at all of the options that were available to me. And I am currently a student of the University of Oregon in the educational program, specifically the SCS, Family and Community Services Program. And I will graduate, hopefully next spring, with BS, and I wish to go on and get a master's in that program. I would not be able to do this without the funding of vocational rehab. Without the funding and without school, I do not foresee a way that I would be able to have the skills needed to be marketable in the employment field. Without the education I'm receiving currently, I don't foresee that I would be able to have a job within the next few years and begin paying back all those medical bills. Vocational rehab has also been instrumental in transportation. I lived in an area that was not on a bus route, and when my car broke down, they were wonderful and very prompt in helping me get that fixed so I didn't miss school. As a person who will be receiving funding from vocational rehab for the next few years, I very much wish to see this program continue. For all the people like me who will follow me and needing this program and benefiting from this program, I wish to see it continue. Thank you very much.
I'm Pat Boyce. I'm from Albany. I am a client of Guy Good down there, G-O-O-D-E. I'm very impressed with what he's been able to do with me. As you see, I'm not young. And I'm certainly not dead from the neck up, but I've had multiple problems and finding out I'm going to have some more too. I want to work. We are in a county that's got problems. It's becoming a bedroom county, I think everybody knows this. And finding a job for me with night blindness, they say, oh, go to Salem. You're right. At 5 o'clock, it's black in the winter, you all know, so I can't make the drive. So they are working very hard to find me employment. Also, I'm not one of those computer whiz kids. I'm not of that era. Look at one and almost fainted. But they are teaching me. I'm pretty normal, I think. I find out I can push the buttons and I don't kill anything and don't shut down the system forever. But they are training me so that I can go out and work. I got to. My husband's younger than I am, and Social Security is not an option. And I've done my thing for the world. I've had 5 kids. I've worked. But I'm still wanting to. Mm-hmm. And I do hope you all support this. I need it. So do they.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your coming today. Tell us what Voc Rehab is actually doing for you in terms of training and support.
It's mostly the computers,
uh-huh.
because I am college educated.
Mm-hmm.
not afraid of people. I like them. Very determined creature.
But what you needed was have your skills
upgraded, and that's the computer thing, which there isn't a job out there. You look in the paper, computer, you get crazy with it. And
thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there other questions of this particular panel? Appreciate again your coming and testifying. Now I'm going to call up sort of what I'm going to try to do for the vocational rehabilitation. This is still on that budget. I'm going to call those that are more than 100 miles from Salem, and I'll do this in threes. So the next group I'd like to have come up is Barbara Wassenberg, Laura Arnold, Terry Zacanti. Good afternoon. Identify yourself for the record and go ahead and speak.
My name is Loria Arnold. I'm from Roseburg, Oregon. I'll be very brief.
G-O-O-D-E. I'm very impressed with what he's been able to do with me. As you see, I'm not young. And I'm certainly not dead from the neck up, but I've had multiple problems and finding out I'm going to have some more too. I want to work. We are in a county that's got problems. It's becoming a bedroom county, I think. Everybody knows this. And finding a job for me with night blindness, they say, oh, go to Salem. Right. At 5 o'clock, it's black in the winter, you all know, so I can't make the drive. So they are working very hard to find me employment. Also, I'm not one of those computer whiz kids. I'm not of that era. Looked at one and almost fainted, but they are teaching me. I'm pretty normal, I think. I find out I can push the buttons and I don't kill anything and don't shut down the system forever. But they are training me so that I can go out and work. I've got to. My husband's younger than I am, and Social Security is not an option. And I've done my thing for the world. I've had 5 kids. I've worked. But I'm still wanting to. Mm-hmm. And I do hope you all support this. I need it. So do they.
Thank you. I appreciate your coming today. Tell us what Voc Rehab is actually doing for you in terms of training and support.
It's mostly the computers,
uh-huh.
because I am college educated.
Mm-hmm.
Not afraid of people.
Mm-hmm.
I like them. Very determined creature.
So what you need was have your skills upgraded,
and that's the computer thing, which there isn't a job out there. You look in the paper, computer, you get crazy with it. And
thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there other questions of this particular panel? I appreciate, again, your coming and testifying. Now I'm going to call up sort of what I'm going to try to do for the vocational rehabilitation. This is still on that budget. I'm going to call those that are more than 100 miles from Salem. And I'll do this in threes. So the next group I'd like to have come up is Barbara Wassenberg, Laura Arnold, Terry Zacanti. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Identify yourself for the record and go ahead and speak.
My name is Loria Arnold. I'm from Roseburg, Oregon. I'll be very brief. Vocational rehabilitation meant working. I was very marketable, but unable to get any businesses to hire me. Growing up in a small town, they weren't used to having people with disabilities out in the workforce. They didn't feel I could do the job. I needed someone on my side who could go in and say, you can't make that choice. You got to let her come in and try. I have been able to work in many wonderful jobs because of their intervention. They also funded 2 years of college for me. One of my jobs included working here in the 87th legislature. So I had a good time. I have also tried to give back to my community and to vocational rehabilitation for all of their help in finding employment for me by becoming a member of the State Rehabilitation Advisory Council and serving on that for a number of years. And I also started with a group of other individuals an independent living center in Roseburg called Umpqua Valley Disabilities Network that does get people with disabilities in touch with programs and agencies that can give them support and guidance. I thank you for your support on behalf of the many people here that are asking for your support with vocational rehabilitation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Sorry, I wasn't surprised to see you here. I was only surprised that you are here. She has done a considerable amount of travel, and the last I knew she was headed off on a very interesting sounding trip, and it surprised me to see you here in the crowd because I thought you'd probably be in some other climb about.
No, I'm back from Mexico.
And I would have to second the motion. She has been one of the most delightful persons to work with. She and Annette Hall, the young fellow down there, have been very instrumental in getting the Disability Service Network stuff started. Their heads up when they want to do something about curb cuts, they go and volunteer their time on the city planning. They're in the engineering department to be on the committee and also go out and start rounding up dollars to do the jobs and things like this, which makes it very, very palatable for people to get in and cooperate with them. They've just been a tremendously fun group. Dean Hatfield is another one. I'm not sure. I don't think Dean's here today, possibly, but he's just recently retired as a vocational rehabilitation person head of the agency there in Roseburg. And they've been extremely instrumental in working with these folks. And believe me, they challenge all of us to get out and get things done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I remember Loria, she's a young lady yet. When I moved to Roseburg, she was around playing on the streets and carrying on. And I wondered at the time if she'd ever get serious enough to do anything like this. I would have never have guessed it.
Are you saying
that
he's
retired? Well,
he's getting old.
Got him.
Okay.
My name is Barbara Watsonberg, and I'm 52 years old. When I was 6 years old, I was hit by a car. Mm-hmm. I had was in a coma for over a month, and then I was in the hospital a month after that. I had to learn how to walk and talk all over again. I took therapy treatment for years when I was younger in school. And I grew up and had 3 children, and then I come to a point I always wanted to do something, but I was told I can't for all my life. You can't do this, you can't do that, and I believed it. Well, it comes to a point where I had to. Vocational rehabilitation has helped me do that. They've got me a one-handed typing program. They sent to Canada to get it. It was very expensive. I couldn't have done it without them. I'm working, have been working since the 11th day of August of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And my thanks goes to rehabilitation, vocational rehabilitation, and I think it's a wonderful program that I'd like to get. Continue because I would like to see people in my condition and worse help.
Thank you. Thank you, Danielle.
My name is Terry Ciccanti, and I'm here from Bend, Oregon. And 6 years ago, I was disabled with multiple sclerosis, and I lost everything. I lost my home. I was unable to work because of medical bills. I was lost in every way, and had no idea how I was going to find some meaning and purpose in my life. And I got a letter one day telling me about this vocational rehab program, and I thought, well, I might as well go talk to these people. I have nothing else to lose. And I did. I had this dream that I might be able to help other people with medical problems through the power of their minds. And I'm now a licensed clinical and medical hypnotherapist in Bend in private practice, and I work with people with medical disabilities. And I feel like I have a lot to share with them because of my experience. Were it not for Voc Rehab, I would have not been able to afford to do that program. And even more than that, the support that they've given me and the encouragement that they've given me has been such a help to me. They've given me back some meaning and purpose in my life. And for anyone who's been disabled, that's a gift worth more than gold, worth more than money can buy, to get up every morning and know that I have a purpose again and that I'm out there and I'm helping people. So I think it's really, really important that you continue funding for this program. I'm now challenged with chronic blindness. Excuse me. And I feel that there might come a time when I may need some more help from Voc Rehab just to continue what I'm doing. So I think it's a really important program, and I feel like for so many people, just to have some meaning and some purpose to get up every morning, it's doing wonders for the state. So please continue for me.
Any questions for any of this panel?
Oh, can I say one more thing? I gave you some copies of some letters that I sent to the Bend Bulletin and to the governor, and I just thought that
might. We'll make that part of the record. Again, thank you all for coming forward. I have been impressed myself with the vocational rehabilitation division, so just to let you know, I think you're doing a good job, too.
Thank you.
I will call up next Stephen Glover, Sr., James Coots, and how about Stephen Wright?
Good afternoon. I'm Stephen Glover from Terrebonne in Central Oregon. Nice travel today. I've had Voc Rehab work with me for over 10 years. I've been on dialysis, had a kidney transplant, on and off, and they stuck with me all the time. Probably the biggest thing that they've done, besides helping me with my schooling, was when it came time to find a job, and the people that looked at me in different organizations, I realized I hadn't worked for 10 years without the Voc Rehab behind me and talking to the people behind the scene. I don't believe I would ever got a job after being out of the workforce for over 10 years. I now work for the Oregon Department of Revenue and face good place to work. But I would like to thank you all for supporting Voc Rehab in the past, and please do it in the future.
Even I expected you to be older with that senior behind your name. You've got a beard, but that doesn't work.
My son's 32, so I'm not pretty young.
You're kidding.
Good advice.
Good. Okay.
Excuse me. My name is James Coots. Thank you all for this opportunity to be here. I live in Southern Oregon in Cave Junction. I'd like to read from my particular piece. I've given you all copies of this, I believe, titled How Voc Rehab Has Helped My Life. It's hard for me to speak, so I'll just try to read this. I've told you my name is James Coos. I'm about to graduate from Rural Community College with an AES degree in electronics technology. I've been involved with the state office in Grants Pass since January of 1996 when I decided to make a radical change in my sedentary lifestyle by enrolling into college with the goal of being self-sufficient after many years from 1979 until then of being disabled and underemployed. I've had three neck fusion surgeries since 1986, including the last one in April of last year that required me to take time out of my schoolwork. I was also involved in lobbying for reinstatement of full-time college students as a result of the changes in rules by the OHP a few years ago to reinstate poor full-time students back into having Oregon Health Plan coverage. That particular event resulted in me having to reduce my school endeavors to less than full-time to maintain my health care, and that choice gave me two problems that I had to get back $500 in financial aid. But the problem that was really concerned me there, it lengthened my school term by making me have to go for one full year longer. The assistance provided by the Grants Pass office has allowed me to be very comfortable while doing my related schoolwork due to my orthopedic conditions and as well as my neck as my low back. They've provided me a very high quality level of service. All of the people in the office, from the secretaries to the counselors, they've provided me with emotional support as well as monetary support. They've allowed me to have items like a drafting table to do my work, computer calculator to do my electronic stuff, as well as much-needed gas money and eyeglasses. They've also paid for tuition and books at various times throughout the 3.5 years that I've been with them. If these items were not made available for me, I would have been at my goal for much longer than the 3.5 years it's taken me to get this far. By reaching my goal of self-sufficiency, then I can now provide for my three children and realize my dreams that are taking shape as I prepare to graduate and enter this scary world of having a job now after not having one since 1979. This opportunity would have been much longer in the making, if not for all the support provided by this Grants Pass office and the monies that have been made available to me. Thank you for your time to listen to me and allow us to sustain you.
Thank you. Representative Ross.
Just briefly, what is your vocational goal? What job would you be looking for?
My particular use of my electronics degree, I want to work in the medical field, be a hospital technician who monitors devices. I've had so much medical care given to me that I recognize that need, so that's where I want to target my direction.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
My name is Steve Wright. I live in Portland. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. 5 years ago, I had a devastating traumatic brain injury as a result of a fall that occurred in Bend, Oregon. Prior to that time, I was the CEO of two Bend-based companies. Prior to that time, I had a group of analysts at Ford Motor Company. We had a budget of $250 million a year that we worked with. I started four Oregon-based companies that are very, very successful today and have had some very fine professional accomplishments. But the traumatic brain injury is probably the hardest challenge that I've ever had. After being in a fetal position for about 3 or 4 days or so, and then being out of work for about 2 months, I decided to go back to work again. When I got back to work, I found out that I couldn't think, remember, I could not spell simple words. I couldn't do those things that I would have expected out of any of my seven kids to do. I took a look at myself in the mirror and I said, something is wrong here. I then had enough smarts to get a psychologist who then suggested I go to a neuropsychologist that then suggested that I get cognitive rehab at an out-of-state center, which I then went to and was up in Seattle for approximately 4 months. Came back again, tried to get a job, even as a baker at a local food store. Couldn't get that either. I went through about 10 months of unemployment, one day, and actually there were about 200 leads that I was trying to get and just couldn't get anything at all. One day, September of 3 years ago, I decided to go up to the employment department of the North Portland Office of Employment. And I must have said a magic word to a clerk, which was, I have a brain injury. Her eyes became so wide that I said, did I say something wrong? She said, no, you didn't. But I have a person I want you to talk to, and that person's name is Dan Irwin. He is a vocational rehab specialist, and I think he'd very much like to talk to you. So we sat down. This was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. By the time we got done, it was 6:30 that night, and he knew exactly what I was saying. He knew exactly how I felt. Within 1 month, I had myself a job as an entry-level clerk. At that point, I saw that I was starting to fail a little bit. He got me 2 job coaches, for 2 separate times, there were job coaches that helped me out to give me the accommodations that I needed in order to be that success in society that I thought that I would always be. What has happened to me should not have happened to anyone at all, but I have some angels that have watched over me, one of which is Dan. Today, because I feel that I'm better than what I was 3 years ago, I interviewed for a program budget manager's position at the Oregon Health Division. I hope I get the job, but I know that if it wasn't because of vocational rehab, I would not be sitting in that interviewing chair this morning. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Other questions? We sure thank you for coming forward and telling us your stories. Next, we're going to have Mary Crawford, Gary Heron, Primo Knight.
We'll hand you that microphone again.
Right.
Good afternoon. Gary, do you want to start?
Sure, I can start. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mary Crawford. I'm a member of the State Rehab Advisory Council. I'm here as a consumer. I'm here as an advocate. And I'm here as a champion of vocational rehabilitation and the services to the disabled in the state of Oregon. Oregon is extremely unique when it comes to services to the disabled. This is evident in many areas of the services to the disabled. For example, in Oregon, the ADA applies to businesses with only 6 employees, whereas on a federal basis, it applies to employers with 15 employees. We have a community-based care system that allows people to come into my house to get me dressed so that I can go to school, so that I can become a productive citizen. Recently, Vocational Rehabilitation was involved in developing a pilot project, the first in the nation, to develop a mediation alternative to fair hearing, so that people have an easier way to communicate with vocational rehabilitation when they're not getting the services they think that they need. And probably one of the most exciting things that has happened is vocational rehabilitation and senior and disabled services has gotten a grant from a couple of different sources, one a private and the other the Rehab Services Administration, which is the federal arm that provides the matching funds that you've heard so much about today. This initiative will allow people with disabilities to keep their health insurance and the personal care attendant to be able to work. It's phenomenal what this program is going to allow people to do.
but they have to have the skills to get the jobs so that they can work, so that they can utilize the personal care attendant and the medical services. So the groundwork needs to be laid, and that's where vocational rehabilitation comes in. It provides services and training to allow us to get the job so that we can become productive citizens. It's a solid investment for the state of Oregon to invest in these services. As you've heard repeated today, almost for every dollar that the state provides, the federal government provides 3 additional dollars. That makes it a very smart investment. But beyond the dollars and cents, it allows us to become taxpayers so that we can begin paying into the system instead of just taking out. And this may not make a whole lot of sense in budgets and money matters, but frankly, it gives us a reason to get out of bed. It gives us a reason to look at our children and say, I'm disabled, but I can still be a productive citizen. Vocational rehabilitation provides a lot of services, from providing tuition and books so that people can go to school. In my case, one of my big barriers, because I live in a community with no public transportation, and I needed to be able to have a vehicle with a ramp, vocational rehabilitation paid for the modification of my van, which was a cost that I could not bear in addition to purchasing the van. They provide counseling, and they provide support. And probably most importantly, they provide a cheerleader in the time of our lives when it's difficult for us to have people behind our vision and our dreams. So I'm here today to ask you to continue to fund vocational rehabilitation so that we can continue to get the matching dollars, so that we can provide careers for people, not just jobs, but careers, so that we can support our families and become productive citizens. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mary. Representative Brown.
And what is your career goal?
Well, I'm getting ready in about 2 weeks to graduate from Willamette Law School. So I plan to go into employment law to prevent discrimination based on age, gender, disability, that type of thing.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Our Senator Fisher.
Question. What function does Boris...
Oh, aside from being the class clown and the mascot of Willamette this year, he actually got his picture taken for the class picture, so we'll see. Boris, when I'm in a manual chair, he pulls my chair and picks things up that I drop and helps me transfer if I need to transfer to a chair or to my seat in the van to drive. So he actually does do some sort of function.
Madam Chair, I saw you had a different harness from the normal guide dog.
Right.
And yes, I wondered if it wasn't something where he was a helper.
Right. I'm not visually impaired. He helps me with the mobility. He's technically a mobility assistance dog. He's trained back in Ohio. He's actually my second service dog.
Thank you. Primo. Can you reach that line?
God, awesome. My name is Primo Knight, and I'm from Springfield, and I'd like to thank y'all for listening to us. What Voc Rehab has done for me pretty much is give me money. I was on Social Security disability. A drunk driver had run over me, and now I'm in a wheelchair. I was on disability and Social Security, and I could make more money sitting at home wasting away than I could at work. But I'm not that type of person, and I wanted to get a job, so I went to the state employment office, and it was really difficult because I was not a disabled veteran, so they have no services for me there. After 2 or 3 times, I finally got the name of the vocational rehabilitation place, and they have been wonderful. I was one semester short of my engineering degree. They tried to find me many jobs, but I needed a job where I'd make more money and I worked on disability, and that was tough without a college degree. So they paid for classes at LTC and OSU both. I did finish my degree and graduated in December, an engineering degree. The U.S. Forest Service hired me a year and a half ago when I started this program under the help of vocational rehabilitation people. And they let me work part-time for this whole period, and I started full-time permanent position in the Civil Engineering Department of Sayusco National Forest in Corvallis. So without their assistance for tax, gas money to drive to Corvallis 4 days a week to go to school, or in the classes and the books and all that, I wouldn't have ever been able to finish my degree because it would just cost too much. And they covered that gap between what Social Security did. And so I was able to get a job, which would enable me to give up those benefits. And that's what they've done. They've covered that gap. Now I'm full-time permanent. I'm not on disability, paying taxes, and I'm happy again. Thank you.
Where do you live?
I live in Springfield.
So you have quite a commute then.
Yeah, actually, I do. Actually, I'm a shared employee. I work for the Willamette National Forest also. So I work for both forests. Yeah, and I just bought a new rig. Thank God, because of the gas prices. I was driving a 78 Chevy 400, four-wheel drive, big, huge truck, and it already had hand controls on it. So my gas consumption was huge. I just purchased an S10, but part of the deal was, I couldn't finance another $500 for the hand controls. The Volk Rehab picked that up, which made it a much easier decision to make a purchase on a vehicle. Driver had run over me, and now I'm in a wheelchair. I was on disability and Social Security, and I could make more money sitting at home wasting away, and I couldn't work. But I'm not that type of person, and I wanted to get a job, so I went to the state employment office, and it was really difficult because I was not a disabled veteran, so they have no services for me there. After two or three times, I finally got the name of the vocational rehabilitation place, and they have been wonderful. I was one semester short of my engineering degree. They tried to find me many jobs, but I needed a job where I'd make more money than I would on disability, and that was tough without a college degree. So they paid for classes at LTC and OSU both. I did finish my degree and graduated in December, an engineering degree. The U.S. Forest Service hired me a year and a half ago when I started this program under the help of vocational rehabilitation people. And they let me work part-time for this whole period, and I started full-time permanent position in the Civil Engineering Department of Sayusco National Forest in Corvallis. So without their assistance for gas money to drive to Corvallis 4 days a week to go to school, or in the classes and the books and all that, I wouldn't have ever been able to finish my degree because it would just cost too much. And they covered that gap between what Social Security did until I was able to get a job, which would enable me to give up those benefits. And that's what they've done. They've covered that gap. Now I'm full-time permanent. I'm not on disability, paying taxes, and I'm happy again. Thank you.
Where do you live?
I live in Springfield.
So you had quite a commute then.
Yeah, actually, I do. Actually, I'm a shared employee. I work for the Willamette National Forest also. So I work for both forests. Yeah, and I just bought a new rig. Thank God, because of the gas prices. I was driving a 78 Chevy 400, four-wheel drive, big, huge truck, and it already had hand controls on it. So my gas consumption was huge. I just purchased an S10, But part of the deal was, you know, I couldn't finance another $500 for the hand controller. The Voc Rehab picked that up, which made it a much easier decision to make a purchase on a vehicle. So they've helped me out quite a bit.
Thank you.
Gary?
Yeah.
My situation is pretty much redundant to what you've heard already, so I won't waste too much time. I have MS, and I've been dealing with Voc Rehab for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And at this point, they've just purchased a computer for me to do digital imaging so that I can have a job. And I am currently learning the computer and within 3 months I will be able to right now I'm doing part-time jobs, and within 3 months I'll be in a full-time situation. I would urge you to support the funding for Voc Rehab. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
I only have, I have four people left from the vocational rehabilitation. However, I do have a page full of people for the Commission for the Blind. And I'm wondering, and the folks, the rest of the folks on the vocational rehabilitation list, I don't mean to slight you, but if you are less than 100 miles away, I'm hoping that you will allow me to let at least three of the individuals that were here for the Commission for the Blind yesterday and were not able to speak. Hopefully you'll forgive me for that. And what we'll do is I will ask for Lynn Parker, Mike Bullis, and former Senator Monroe Sweetland to come forward, please.
Madam Chair, I've written testimony. Would you like that?
Okay. What I'd like to do is complete these three reports. There's just a few minutes. I'll do the rest of these. Okay.
The bless of Lee, I think Senator Sweetland ought to go first.
Senator, go ahead.
You go ahead.
Senator Sweetland, you go ahead. Please.
All right. This is a very important hearing. They're dealing with subjects that government has wrestled with for years, but only limited success. Are you asking me another question?
No.
Okay. I remember where I got my education on this subject. It was not in a doctor's family in the hospital in which I was raised. MD father and mother, but in my experience in the Oregon legislature, way back in the 1940s and 50s, I was a member first of the House and then of the Senate, and we had one member, I represented Clackamas County. I had been publishing and owned a paper in Newport, and there we had a remarkable public citizen, Andy Natterman, was a fisherman by trade, but who, because of his blindness, could really not hold down normal conventional jobs, and yet he'd been a very successful citizen. He and his wife, who was his legislative assistant, came to the legislature the same time I did, and we became much better acquainted and better friends over here. During those years, he would struggle valiantly on subjects such as you had before you today, and related subjects. Because of his experiences, he had become really our legislative expert on disabilities of all kinds, although his was primarily visual. He provided the service which Mr. Young's department now supplies so generously all over the state. But the thing that I learned out of it most of all was the spin-off benefits of the small trickle of support which the state and the federal government was hardly in at all, the state only very moderately, the trickle of support which of public funds which multiplied many times over in terms of the advice and counsel and gratuitous aid that he and his wife provided to a wide circle of acquaintances and friends, because, of course, the word spreads. He had helped them so much to find multiple ways in which to be helpful to themselves first, but also for a minimum expenditure to be spreading that experience and knowledge in a much wider circle. Now, you're getting case testimony here on both of these issues, and I hope that all of you appreciate, as I learned to do from Andy Nettlin, how much wider that circle gets than the simple dollar expenditure which we make. I think of various incidents, people in those years, and we didn't have the services to the extent you have now of the advice and counsel. I'm particularly familiar with the commissions of the line because long years after I was through with the legislature, I had this macular degeneration hit me that has so many thousands of Oregonians, and now we see our public support to the people who spread the good word of how these benefits can be multiplied throughout the state. I think I won't try to give you any case histories, just make that statement if I may. I think former Senator Burns was here yesterday, or he is on the blind commission. But the good work you do in this committee goes far, far beyond the people who are listed in your records of the benefits, which you see in the testimony here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mike?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Bullis. I've provided you with some written testimony, and I won't. I'll summarize it because I know we have a very limited amount of time. I've been very fortunate as a blind person to be employed most of my life. I've had a job and a boss to hate most of my life, and sometimes I've been the boss since I've owned my own businesses. Currently own the Kaleidoscope Tavern in North Salem. I'm not sure that was a career move up or what, but I've been lucky, and I've often thought about why, and I guess the reason really is that at some point a person with a disability has to come in contact with other people who can give them the training, and most of all the belief that it can be done. Without those kinds of experiences, it doesn't happen, because the disability, not by its nature, but by the fear that it engenders, says to the person, life is over, you can't do it. And until we train those folks to do that, that nothing really positive happens. And that's the valuable service that the Commission for the Blind and Voc Rehab Division both provide. It really is the transmission to people that you can do it. It's a belief transmission. It's a positive attitude transmission. Both of these agencies suffer seriously from budget issues, and that particularly deals with programs like the programs for older blind people that help Ross and other folks. The older blind program, for example, has no staff here in Salem. I know that, and the Commission for the Blind suffers from technological issues, lack of money, and being able to provide the kinds of computer equipment that people need. This cost me $3,500. I was able to buy it on my own. The first one I bought many, many years ago weighed about 50 pounds, and I used to have one arm that was a lot longer than the other one, carrying it around. Obviously, the technology has gotten a lot cheaper, and thanks to some of the training I got, I was able to buy my own equipment this time. But it's making people independent that seems to me the area that sometimes gets the last look when it comes to funding, because we're so busy taking care of people's needs. in terms of medical and maintenance and welfare, et cetera. We know those are immediate needs, and they feel like a crisis, and so we take care of them at the expense of some of these other programs. There we go. Okay. I guess maybe to summarize anything else here that I should say, I'm one of the people responsible for a budget note that you have on both agencies' budgets that dealt with a split between the Commission for the Blind and the Oak Rehab Division on funding. Senator Hannon and I brought that to the attention of the last legislature and then brought it to the E-Board. Our real issue in trying to note that for you is to note that, yes, the Commission for the Blind needed more funding. Yes, Voc Rehab should not get cut in terms of its funding. That our initial thrust with that budget note was to suggest that the money ought to come out of the Department of Human Resources Administration, since we didn't think that an agency needed two administrations. And I understand that that's not necessarily a real popular view to take about the Department of Human Resources, but it certainly is one that I've spoken on other occasions. But at all costs, our issue is that both agencies need more dollars. I think John Yonker last summer said it well when DAS was asked to come back to the E-Board with an accurate report, and that both agencies have been underfunded for many years and need to be looked at. My real appeal to you is that at some level we need to focus energy and attention on programs that make people, help people become independent, because that's really what good government does. And if we get totally bogged down with trying to take care of folks, we don't send the same message. Yes, we need to take care of them, but at some point, if taking care of them means that we can't help them become independent, then we create dependency for folks. So I would advocate strongly that both of these agencies get fully funded budgets, that the issues the Commission for the Blind has in their budget packages for older blind program funding, as well as the technology resources they need in order to help people get employed, are focused on and dealt with. It's the American dream. Everyone needs a job and a boss to hate, and I think people with disabilities ought to have one too.
Thank you. Mr. Parker.
My name is Winslow Parker. I'm the Oregon Commission for the Blind employee for the Technology Center and the Commission for the Blind, and I too have a story to tell about my path with blindness and how I went through the Commission for the Blind as a client. But with your permission, I would like to focus on what we do in the Technology Center portion of the Commission for the Blind and how we do help blind people become employed using technology. We have two major goals in the Technology Center to meet the Commission's mission to get people back to work. The first is to assess and train people to use technology so that technology can be used on the job. The second is to do job site assessments and analyses to see whether the adaptive software and hardware that we do use can be used in that particular job setting for a particular individual or some future employment. As a client comes in for assessment and training, we determine their visual needs. For example, we may determine they need a screen magnification program. It may be a screen reading program. It may be a braille type device as might be used here. And once the assessment is performed, then we train them using that adaptive equipment to use common Windows programs such as Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, or Windows itself on the keyboard rather than using a mouse. And for those of you who are mouse dependent, there is a better way of doing it if you want to come to the office. The second part, we use one-on-one training, and we use group training programs such as Introduction to Computers or Internet training on a group basis, depending on the person's goals, where they fit within our priority scheme within the Technology Center. In a job assessment, we go to the job site, we'll actually install our hardware or software, test it in their environment, determine whether our software needs to be changed in any way to meet their needs, and then have the trained person ready to go into that position. We've done that for many people. We have attorneys who are trained. We have people doing such things as those who bother you at 5:30 after dinner time, calling you for telephone solicitations, and many other jobs in between those two extremes. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Are there any questions for this panel? It would have to be really quick questions.
Madam Chair,
Representative,
I would like to say good afternoon to Senator Sweetland. This is Representative Logan. Fellow Miller.
Thank you.
Okay, if there are no questions of this panel, what I would like to do, and I apologize to members if you have to go to another committee because it is 3 o'clock, I do want to call up just the remaining folks from that came for vocational rehabilitation, and we will throw them out. There are going to be 4 people, and if somebody can pull up a chair, we'll have Sherry, Janelle, Jimmy, James Carter, and Terry. Good afternoon. Identify yourself for the record, please. And then you'll hear from you, just in whatever order you choose.
I'm Lynn McKinney, and I'm from Eugene. And my career has been working with people with disabilities. So I just want to let you know that 11% of the population has a significant disability. About 60% of those people are not employed. But about 70% of them work. I just hear some cool things. I have never worked with anyone or known anyone with a disability who's really happy about being on SSI and sitting on the front seat all day. And I finally came to the conclusion that working really depends on what kind of support you get. Much more than how familiar the disability is. When I became more disabled in 1983 and couldn't continue doing what I was doing, I went to VR. And they paid for my first 2 quarters from graduate school. They bought me a typewriter and they paid for my books. After that, I got a GTF, so I didn't really need my financial assistance. And I continued working full-time until just a couple of years ago, when I became increasingly disabled. At that point, VR bought me a lift to my car so that I can get around with my power chair, which I now use. And I'm now working part-time as a consultant. Do we need extra support? Yeah, we do. We need financial support to be employed. But when you senior, and $7,000 a year is spent on these employees, and you're for a little cross family on SSI, or SSCI, and Medicaid, you know, the government's come out ahead, basically. When you senior, and that's tax money that I pay them in the year, plus the money I put into the economy, you know, and the people that I've worked with and trying to make a difference too. I think I've done pretty well. I think probably, you know, stay warm and done pretty well. Having me here, is successful with everyone? No, there are a lot of other factors, you know, on disemployment. Not everyone makes it the first time through. Not everyone makes it too, and there are people going to not make it to employment. There's been thousands of our services in terms of employment help, job training, job placement, education, has really made a difference in VR being taxpayers and using the tax money. And I think that's very important.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll have Terry.
My name is Terry Bukos, and I'm a youth transition specialist at Warren High School in Eugene. And I'm here to support full funding of the budget. I work with about 20 students each year. actually more than that because we do some group work as well. But the students that I work with, I think once they are out in adult life, this is my third year as a YCP specialist, have more confidence, believe in themselves, have had the support. That's a healthy start to a good life. And I have some stories of some of the students. I would have brought students if I'd known I was going to be presenting today, because that was something I would have liked to do, and I had some students that were willing to do that. But another part of it that we haven't really talked about today as well is the effect that Oak Rehab has on businesses in the community. The business people appreciate the people that have gone through Oak Rehab, because the people that are out there working, I feel, have more of a value of what they're about. They value what they've received through Oak Rehab. They value the position that they're working in, and they have a lot better feeling about themselves. Students that I've worked with in the past, one of the students was working for a warehouse. He didn't realize that he'd need math skills to be able to work in that warehouse. We worked with him as a job coach. I was the job coach through YCP, to help him be able to do his job. Not only that, but a secondary issue came up was he needed ergonomic training so that he could use his body when he was working out in that warehouse. He's worked there for almost 2 years now and is doing really well. I just talked to his employer just the other day. Another student is going to Oregon State University. Oak Rehab will be helping her with an FM system. Another student is working in retail, and his mode of transportation, you've heard people talk about transportation, was his parents. His mother had a seizure, and Oak Rehab helped pay for him to get training so that he could drive his car back and forth to work, and therefore he did not lose his job. He was working off hours where he wasn't able to take a bus back and forth, but Oak Rehab was there, and that really helped him maintain that employment. He is still working. Another young student, one of the things that we did with our students is we had those that were taking buses back and forth to work take a self-defense class because of the issues of, street problems and so forth. So one of the students took this particular self-defense class, which was not funded but coordinated with Voc Rehab. The person was doing this as a volunteer. He is a person with a disability. He's giving back to the community. He's teaching these students self-defense skills. And this particular student happened to be, we didn't know at the time, a victim of sexual abuse and violence, domestic violence. She's a teen parent with two children, 17 years old with a 3-year-old. She now has the ability to speak for herself. She has self-confidence to say, I don't want this kind of a lifestyle anymore. The person that was victimizing her is no longer in her life. But she wouldn't have had that if we hadn't started with Oak Rehab. So it has a lot broader spectrum of assistance to people. And also the fact that these kids and these adults are able to give back to the community once they are actually getting a paycheck, and that they're staying in the jobs that they're going for. And that's my reason for believing in your system. Thank you.
Sure. We didn't hand out a sticker, so. and thank you for, it's really physically challenging to actually drive the systems and get here. So if I would have known that there may have been a chance that I couldn't speak, then I would have been glad to write the testimony. So that's why I was like, wait a minute, not a chance to tell my side of things. My name is Sherry Friend, and I live in Springfield, Oregon. It's ironic that I was informed of this meeting because 2.5 years ago, there was a meeting held with multi-agencies of the state system. My father had retired, and therefore I had to draw off of his retirement, which was $4 over SSI, and that shut down my daughter's grant, my 5-year-old daughter's grant, and her medical, which all the other agencies wanted us to, me and my daughter, to be able to support ourselves and live off $532 this year with the cost of living increases, $532 each month for me and my daughter to support her. I couldn't do it. And I had to put my heels in and say, no, I don't know. I need something here. All the other, why, you know, I've been told I can't do this. I'm, you know, and obviously, handicap accessible is very, convenient and good for most. But for me, the toilets are not a good thing when it's handicap accessible. that is a challenge. So, you know, for me, it's a little different story. It's a little bit of twist. My floors are clean. My floors are spotless. Anything about that? We're having some problems. So, what rehab has done for me is actually, the multi-agencies didn't know what to do with me, until rehab spoke up and I was kind of like placed on their lap. So, we don't know what to do with her. Here, you take her and do something. Which I am so thankful because it's brought a new lease on my life and my daughter's life, for her future. And for my community's future, and rehab has actually helped to modify the vehicle, the van I have now, so I can drive it. It has a lift on it, so there's a chair. They're in the process of actually making a motorized chair that will go up and down and move around where I wasn't happy with. They wanted to be able to modify a place to put me, and I said, I've never been allowed to work anywhere my whole life, and you can't just place me somewhere. What if I don't work out? You know, I don't want to be stuck somewhere. I don't want them stuck with me. And so we worked. It took a while to find someone that could actually, an engineer that could manage this. And I wouldn't have known where to start. Luckily, rehab, Casey Rehabilitation, did. And this chair will actually move me up and down to my cupboards at home. It makes it easier for the grocery shopping. It makes it easier for me at home. And also I can apply myself for any job I want, basically. Right now, without the vocational rehabilitation services, everybody wants codes, and I've got to show you guys, this is called actually, what is known as a blowout. I just noticed this a couple of days ago, and you and I call this a crutch. Well, Medicare and Medicaid does not call this a crutch. They say no codes, no go. I cannot replace my crutches. I cannot get this fixed for the life of me from, oh, my medical. Well, she has medical. No, if you don't fit into a code, it can't be done. Rehab doesn't give you. Which all the other agencies wanted us to, me and my daughter, to be able to support ourselves and live off 500 and, well, it would be 32 this year with the cost of living increases, $532 each month for me and my daughter to support, for me to support her. I couldn't do it. And I had to put my heels in and say, no, I don't know. I need something here. All the other, why, you know, I've been told I can't do this. I'm, you know, and obviously, handicap accessible is very, convenient and good for most. But for me, the toilets are not a good thing when it's handicap accessible. that is a challenge. So, you know, for me, it's a little different story. It's a little bit of twist. My floors are clean. My floors are spotless. Anything about that? We're having some problems. So, what rehab has done for me is actually, the multi-agencies didn't know what to do with me, until rehab spoke up and I was kind of like placed on their lap. So, we don't know what to do with her. Here, you take her and do something. Which I am so thankful because it's brought a new lease on my life and my daughter's life, for her future. And for my community's future, and rehab has actually helped to modify the vehicle, the van I have now, so I can drive it. It has a lift on it, so there's a chair. They're in the process of actually making a motorized chair that will go up and down and move around where I wasn't happy with. They wanted to be able to modify a place to put me, and I said, I've never been allowed to work anywhere my whole life, and you can't just place me somewhere. What if I don't work out? You know, I don't want to be stuck somewhere. I don't want them stuck with me. And so we worked with, it took a while to find someone that could actually, an engineer that could manage this. And I wouldn't have known where to start. Luckily, rehab, vocational rehabilitation did. And this chair will actually move me up and down to my cupboards at home. It makes it easier for the grocery shopping. It makes it easier for me at home. And also I can apply myself for any job I want, basically. Right now, without the vocational rehabilitation services, you know, I mean, everybody wants codes, and I've got to show you guys. This is called actually what is known as a blowout. And I just noticed this a couple of days ago. And you and I call this a crutch. Well, Medicare and Medicaid does not call this a crutch. They say no code, no go. I cannot replace my crutches. I cannot get this fixed for the life of me from, oh, my medical. Well, she has medical. No, if you don't fit into a code, it can't be done. Rehab doesn't give you a code. Vocational rehabilitation gives you a name, gives you a desire, and also gives you, you know, the mental ability that everyone else is like always, well, you know, you should be happy with that. You get this, you know, you get this, you get that. Well, we don't want to stop there. You know, who wants to stop anywhere? Who wants to just sit around? I don't, maybe there are people that want to. I don't think a lot of us with physical disabilities, we have such a drive. We are such challenged that we're ready to go. Just give us those small steps to help us, you know. Accessibility, and we'll give you the drive back. And right now, I'm actually in this is my second month, or the last of my second month at DMV training in the DMV, and I will be training there for a year. And so far, that's going great. The customers actually just adore me and love me. And I, you know, I'm taking their picture too, so they better. And it's been going really great. My nails are growing out. I don't chew them anymore. You know, I really, my self-esteem has gotten improved greatly. Just by being actually in the workforce in the community, and DVR did this for me. And I just think that if there's any, you know, if you're challenged with budgets to cut or you know, the space cutting, please don't start with DVR. You know, I mean, that's the program where those who are willing to go out and work, that's the last place you should be cutting. And
not
just giving me a lease on life, and I think it has many other people. So,
yeah,
thanks for your support.
We appreciate you coming and telling us, and thank you for coming up and saying, does this mean that we're not going to testify, so that you could testify?
Thank
and
you.
I do appreciate your drive. It's amazing, and I'm glad that vocational rehabilitation is there to help you attain your goals.
Hi, I'm Jen Barter, and I'm from Eugene, and I worked for about 10 years with a taxpaying citizen. Then I was the person that was put on the Social Security disability roster for a few years. Then through my own very hard efforts and DRD combining with the Social Security Working Centers program, I was able to work myself completely off Social Security disability, so I'm just a regular old taxpayer again, like you guys, or at least I'm regular. I guess I shouldn't talk to you guys. And so what DRD does is that they provided for me vocational counseling and guidance. They assisted me with assistive technology, and they assisted me in navigating through all the many, many, many miles of Social Security regs so I could actually tap into the federal government's grant monies, and I hardly cost DRD anything. So, but their specialists knew about those regs and were able to teach me how to do that. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. What? We had a question. Representative Ross.
What job do you have? Where are you working?
I'm an employment specialist. I help people go to work.
Thank you.
A great role model.
Senator Fisher.
I just would like to say to my colleagues who saw last year, for the record, if you haven't seen why it's invigorating and inspiring to be associated and involved in working with these folks, you know what I see literally day in and day out, having a daughter that's not here today because she's working, but knowing that she did not know Braille and was able to get the Braille training from the Commission for the Blind and use a Braille and speak, and I think I saw Mike Willis with the Braille and speak machine. Mike, could you pull that out and just show the folks here what that is?
He put it to us yesterday.
Okay, well, I just wanted to make sure that you understood what a blessing something like that is, and yet if you don't have the Commission for the Blind or DRD or some of these things to get these specialized bits of training, they really aren't hardly available at any price to the average citizen. And my daughter didn't need much but a little bit of help and guidance along in those lines because we were able to provide for her education and things like that ourselves and didn't have to go through bulk rehab. But to be able to take her lessons with the Braille and speak in college and come home then and not have to hang around and try to use equipment and stuff that was have to be shared by a whole bunch of people. She could study them in her own time at her own home and maximize the use of her time and not waste a lot of time in travel and setting over and waiting for machinery to share and things like that. It just made a total difference in her life, and I can't say how much I appreciate you giving these folks a chance to come here today, and I just wanted to say how much I appreciate your work and how ashamed of myself I am sometimes when I get a little bit out of joint with the things that I think that I have a little problems with when these people go out and cough them out every day.
Okay. I agree, Senator, and we do thank you for coming and telling it. It is really, truly an inspiration to hear from you. And
you try to keep up with the Senate, jokes.
I know.
With
I know. But
comedy. You'll lose out every time.
Okay. Let me tell you what we're going to do for tomorrow. We are not going to move the Commission on the Blind budget. We're going to wait until we have a different presentation for that. So we will allow those people, and I'm sorry that there were people that came today that could not testify, but we're going to have some more public testimony on the Commission for the Blind tomorrow if you would like to return. We will allow you to come and do that. Again, I thank those of you who came to, all of you who came to testify, and I will say from my standpoint, and Senator Fisher has sort of given his bias as well, this would not be the place to start cutting the budget. So,
you heard it here.
That's right. Okay. We will adjourn our committee meeting today and reconvene tomorrow at 1 o'clock.